what we do have is what we need to work on. That is the job that we have. And those that would not have had an opportunity, I'm sure with time, will look at their propositions. As I said, we have only three that we received through the parliamentary committee secretariat, that is culture for officials. I'm not sure what that we have. Most of that they are short. I'm sure we wouldn't have any problem. All of them here, the three of them. The one is the Oregon Veterinary Association. The other one is the outrage SA citizens against poaching. And the other, which is the last one, what is the full title of it? Red Fire, is it here? No, sorry, Jim Wistrom, is it here? So we do not have Jim here. So that then takes us only to two. We do have somebody from SAVA. Do we have anybody from OSCAP? Outrage SA, Citizens Against Poaching, do we have anybody? We don't. Which makes our life so easy. I trust they were informed. Which then leaves us only with one presentation. Without waste of time, as I said initially, or in the past week, we were supposed to have had both today and tomorrow for this work to be done. However, we only have one. That currently is here, which we'll then have to deal with. Without waste of time, let's hand over to Southern Veterinary Association people. That's an introduction. If you are with anybody, introduce those, and then we'll take it from there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Dr. Leon de Pre. I am the President of South African Veterinary Association. Our submission is very short to the point, and if everybody has read it, I wish to submit it as tabled. If there's any questions, discussion.
Any areas of emphasis?
The two areas of emphasis as in the presentation, the one is on the compulsory community service, which SAVA supports fully. Our members are very excited about it since 2007. And we do wish to offer from the private veterinary fraternity side our expertise, mentoring abilities and our facilities in public-private partnerships with government to see that this is rolled out in an efficient manner. And then pertaining to the changes as to the appointment of an inspector and the related duties of such an inspector, for that, for us, that is of very, very urgent importance. And we would not wish to see that delayed by any manner. That is very, very urgent for us to see that implemented.
Thank you very much, It's a very straightforward one, short to the point as you mentioned, which will then take us to members responding. I saw the hand Montreal and Montreal in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Dupree, has got a question that he's making Now, I just want to know, what is it that the doctor foresees that maybe the clinic is not aware of?
My first question was also on that, and maybe just a little bit going a bit further into trying to assist with the drawing up of such a plan, because as said in the first section of that, is that the professional is eagerly awaiting, and I presume, you know, a lot of discussions will have to happen between the department and your organisation, or I don't know who will be facilitating this. But that a plan could be drawn up together and maybe sit with the first students that will go through this together, because that for me is my concern, that we take the students already now into this process, and that we don't leave them out of it. I think it's very important that the students must be part of it from the beginning. And then just on the second one, Chair, the implementation of the amendment of Section 31. And I'm not sure what we did discuss it last time, where I asked a question to say what is happening currently. And if maybe we can also just get a bit more on if this act becomes act, what is going to happen the next day? There must be a process. How will we do that process to get it into place as soon as possible, and how do the department see this process, and how long can it take before we can really do it? Because we can't just have it, you know, a law today and tomorrow the process starts. So if we can maybe get some kind of idea of in practice how it will work and how long that will take.
Okay, I think those are the few hands that we have. And also perhaps I think some of those questions would really be questions that the department might also wish to make a comment on. For instance, you know, your anticipated private partnerships, public-private partnerships, anticipated by SAVA, and perhaps also the department could comment on that one. I think the timing is the point raised by Mrs. Day of the implementation of such an act. Equally, would be a matter for the department as well. Okay. Perhaps if we could get Dr. Debris, sorry.
Thank you. Returning to the first question, that is exactly our concerns. We're in August, and so we are cautioning that. Who will be the first year or final years? Will it be the people that will be writing exams in 3 months and suddenly next year? So that's our caution, exactly what has been said. We are very excited about this and we are awaiting, but if we have to wait another year for the plans to be really planned well, that is our caution, that we should not move into it too hasty. So that is pertaining to point one. That is our concern there. On the second point, on the implementation plan and the possibility of public-private partnerships, we do have a plan in place. One of our specialist groups within SAVA is called the Large Animal Health and Production Group, and they already, as far back as 2007, have drawn up a plan that they have discussed with DAF, probably in that year, in 2007 to 2008. So there is a well drawn up plan, action plan, of how we foresee that from our side we can assist and how these partnerships can be done. I might just mention that in the Northern Cape there's already a practice that is doing this and that has drawn up a public-private partnership with the Northwest Department of Agriculture, and it's working very well. And that will probably serve as the role model of how it can be done and how it should be rolled out. But yes, we do have an extensive plan, and absolutely we want to be part and are willing to sit during the planning process and be part of that and see how and which parts of the plan that we already have on the table can be used. On the third question around the process of the implementation of the inspectorate, I think I should rather ask the council to maybe refer to what they already foresee and maybe have in place. Thank you.
Okay. May we allow the department to answer?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And thank you, Honourable Members. Maybe to try and give a picture as to the concerns that maybe Dr. Dupuyer is alluding to from the questions of Honourable Member Tala and Honourable Member Stone. The one big concern that was raised in our consultations was that as we take these newly qualified veterinarians and place them in facilities, we should have proper staff facilities so that they are not just placed anywhere where they are not going to be doing any meaningful job. And then there was also a requirement that, or a concern that because the students will be placed somewhere where governments have stipulated, the functions to be performed by the students should be performed in a professional manner and then within the confines of the veterinary paraveterinary professions to try again to protect the public to which the services will be provided. The veterinarian of concern should also conform to the requirements of the Act. That is, his conduct or his or her conduct should conform to the Act itself. And then, of course, there were concerns that we might place the veterinarians at risk, and then we should take cognizance of the fact that we cannot just place them in risky areas where their lives will be threatened. So I think that is one of the issues that actually came out. Where the student may not be able to get accommodation, if there are alternatives to provide accommodation from the point of view of the state, and that is again a very significant consideration, considering that from the point of view of medical students who are performing compulsory community service, their accommodation is provided for in hospitals, and we may not be having situations like that for the veterinary profession. So an option should be granted that the student should be housed, find himself or herself a flat or a house in the nearby vicinity, wherein obviously an allowance may be paid for the payment to pay the rent, or where there is an opportunity for providing accommodation like that. The other concern was that these veterinarians must not just sit there and have nothing to do. They must be gainfully employed, and which is a thing that we are considering. And then we should also make it possible for them to continuously develop themselves such that they don't necessarily sit there and end up losing whatever knowledge they have learned. And then there was also a request that we should consider coming up with a mentorship program. If you remember very well, Honourable Members, we also indicated the areas in which we would like a specialist in aquaculture, fish diseases, and also bee diseases. And of course, without ignoring the current practicing of the veterinarians themselves, that we may need to develop even more in terms of the current areas of expertise, gynecology and obstetrics, and then also animal production per se. And we should establish proper communication structures, and then we should investigate various options. And meaning that we shouldn't just take a young veterinarian and place him, I'm going to mention a funny place known as Bray. One of the veterinarians once said that we placed him in a very isolated area. But unfortunately, a place like Bray is one of the cattle areas of the country where we need veterinarians. So we should have proper communication structures. Obviously, there must be telephone access, there must be technology access, and things like that. We should pay regular visits to the person just to encourage that him or her that she shouldn't feel left out. But in general, the standard of veterinary services, irrespective of whether people will be offering services to rural people or urban people, they should be maintained. So those are the concerns that actually came out in our consultations. Maybe I should indicate that from the point of view of the department, and if I may, also from the veterinary council's point of view, we are absolutely in agreement with this proposal. And I think that is where the element of question was being raised from the South African Veterinary Association's point of view. Through you, Chair, I would like the legal advisor, the director of legal services from the council and also from the department to probably make reference to the current situation related to the veterinary care.
At the moment, regarding the complaints, the council receives complaints, and then normally they need more information. So this new insertion of section 31A, it's like they appoint investigation officers, which is not there at the present moment. And that is because the council needs more evidence or more documents, and now we appoint investigating officers for the achievement of the objectives of the Act and to establish more facts that they require for the investigation. So they can go up now and go and inspect what you were going to do for. Thank you.
If I may add, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, on the issue of the concerns, I'll start with the concerns. When the discussion started with the various stakeholders, there was an agreement in principle that when coming to the implementation on compulsory community service, there needs to be a forum established to work out on the logistics. And that's what we have agreed upon. So that will take place to make sure that there is proper planning. Now, with regards to the section 31, what I want to add is that most of the time, when there's a complaint, we depend on an affidavit submitted by a complainant, which is then followed by an affidavit from the vet where they are which they are complaining about to respond. And we've been relying on the good relations we have with various stakeholders, for example, with the NPA and SAPS and the various registrars, for example, the Register of Medicines, and also the Register of Act 36, that's the Foodstuffs and Cosmetics Act. And we've been relying on them with that good relations to assist with the investigations. Now, in anticipation of trying to get things right with the amendment of this bill, we've already started engaging them in workshops of this inspectorate that we're anticipating. And there is common acknowledgement and agreement that we need that such an inspectorate, and they have committed as various stakeholders to ensure that they assist us in the various situations.
compiled to implement the students? Will the students be included in the forum? And we must just make sure of that. And then secondly, the cost of this inspectorate or inspections, where is that going to be covered and by who?
Thank you. Chair, I have listened very attentively. You know, in all my years in Parliament, I've never seen such smooth sailing. And that worries me. What I would like to know from the Veterinary Association, I note that there has been broad consultation. If you look at the page 12, you will find that there were a number of bodies that were consulted. Looks to me like the entire spectrum that's involved in veterinary issues. And if we did not get any representations from them, then it tells me that they are all satisfied. But you must always remember one thing when it comes to legislation making, and that is a word called unintended consequences. And that you normally find after the law has been passed and it gets implemented, you then pick up that attention was not paid to this or that or the other. Hence, it calls for amendments. The question I have is that Dr. Modisane referred to the forum that will be created. And furthermore, that there will be some other way of arranging for the, shall I say, the trainee vets to be deployed, issues like that. Now, I don't know whether there is any formal agreement that you people will be entering into with regard to how the forum should be structured. I've heard about a few of the responsibilities of the forum, and whether the various role players will be consulted in creating the framework for such a forum. The other question for the Veterinary Association would be that you talk here about the fact that there should be public-private partnerships which will put their expertise, mentoring abilities and facilities to the disposal of government. Now, as it is phrased here, it's a very noble concept. But you know, if nobody wants your mentoring capabilities, if nobody wants to make use of your expertise, and of course somebody is going to lose out in the process. Again, is there going to be a sort of a memorandum of understanding, some or other written form by which you structure the availability of such expertise and mentoring abilities and etc. etc.? Because in my experience over many years here, what I have seen is that you have a fraternity that offers its expertise, offers its cooperation, etc., etc., but then that hand is just pushed away. That has happened also, and in fact may still be happening. So all I'm asking is, out of the whole lot of instances that were consulted, we only have 1 year before us. Are you absolutely sure? You know, the other day I heard a priest telling a guy, a sincere, seker. Is jy doodseker? Are you sure? Are you very sure? Are you dead sure that you are satisfied? Have you gone through this, looked at the whether the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed? Because, you know, a simple omission of one little word can give the entire clause a complete different connotation. And, of course, you can never have something 100% perfect, but that should be our aim, to try and reach maximum perfection. Wanneer ons beeste teel wil ons ook maar die maximum perfecte diere. So, I'm just asking these questions to be sure in my mind that when we support the passage of this bill, that we are satisfied that those of you that have to live with it, it is your fraternity that has to live with it, are satisfied that it has the necessary provisions. And I just want to warn against one thing, and that is that today you have a particular official in a particular department, and I dare say especially in the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, you don't know what will happen tomorrow. You've got to watch your back all the time. That anything that is verbally said is something that I would never accept. I want things black on white. Otherwise, someone will turn around and say, no, but we don't know about that arrangement. It was done between Dr. Morisane and you guys. We know nothing about it. There's no memorandum here. There's no documentation. So I'm just asking these things so that I'm absolutely sure as a fellow legislator and satisfy myself that everything that you are saying here, that what is appearing here, is above board and that we can proceed. Thank you very much.
It does happen at times that people go through such an exercise which we are going through, that in less than 30 minutes, you know, we shall have heard a submission that went through and where there are no issues at all. It's unthinkable, but it happens. But with regards to the word for word and the T's and the dots and the I's, if you all looked at that is an exercise that we engage in on the 21st of August. So it would be appreciated if all members could read. At the end of the day, this is going to be our legislation. And that is going to impact on the veterinary side. In other words, whatever that shall have transpired out of that legislation would be, we will be the ones accountable for such, because we are policymakers. So we have a responsibility of going through the legislation as drafted as it is before us. I'm sure we all did receive the bill. So we have a responsibility of going through it ourselves and make sure that all what Mr. Abramo is referring to, we are satisfying ourselves. Not so much them. All what they do, they will shall have drafted. For us, we are able to go through and at the end of the day, to say, yes, we are satisfied. Yes, it is a product that any day, any time, woken up any time, we shall
support system
an operational committee, let me put it that way, that will be looking at the day-to-day issues related to the implementation. And we were told by our stakeholders that this committee must be consisting of all the relevant government people and so on. So that's the first institution we have. Then we were also advised that in addition to the operational, you will have a general forum where you are open to inviting all the stakeholders and so on that may from time to time want to make input in the planning as well as on other matters related to the compulsory community service. And that committee was recommended as the compulsory community service forum. We were even at that stage advised that you will even need a third structure that will work totally independent of the people who are implementing and doing the day-to-day operations, who will actually monitor and evaluate the impact that these are doing. So all these forums are therefore there in terms of the proposals that we have, and are they actually enhancing our ability to communicate with our stakeholders as well as with the community service vets who will be on the ground, but also as well as with a network of administrators and mentors on the ground. I think one of the things that the South African Veterinary Council is mentioning is the issues related to partnership and so on. And I think it is true that we have consulted with the private press. We have consulted with a number of animal welfare non-governmental organizations that are currently operating in various areas and so on. And with all those, what came out as the proposals, and these are the recommendations that went into the feasibility study report that was eventually approved for this. And these included that we will have to develop some form of MOUs or so, because what is currently happening is that there are various number of institutions and individuals who are already doing their best to give services in these areas that are currently under service in the normal system and so on. And therefore, we will actually need those people, whether it's a welfare organization or whether it's an independent private vet that is currently operating there. We will need, one, the infrastructure that the EU already has, as well as the supervising or mentoring systems, and so on. So these are, I want to assure the honourable members, that are really well catered for in as far as the proposals are concerned. And in fact, on the report of the feasibility study, they are put in the. Let me then take the issue of consultation specifically with the students. This to us as our main stakeholders that are involved is transitional as they are, as rotating or as changing as they are. From the onset, even before we began the feasibility study, we spoke to the student leadership. Then we went out to discuss with all the stakeholders and so on, and we came back to the students and said, these are the proposals that are on the table that we are putting together. And based on that, we were able to take other additional consent and so on. How do we see the process from now onwards? Once we concluded that informal consultations, if I may put it that way, Then we agreed on the processes that in order for us to move forward, one, we will need a legislative infrastructure, which again, one, it's in a form of an amendment of the Principal Act itself, so this is the process we are in. Once this process is concluded and we have this bill signed into law and becomes operational, we will still need some more time to go back to students and actually now deal with the regulations that support this matter. And that's the period that we envisage that it is not less than 90 days at least, just to deal. We have already done again the basic behind the scenes consultations and so on. We do have two pieces of draft regulations that deals with this, that talks about the facilities and the registrations of persons and so on. But honourable members, the way we really see this in implementation is that once we have all those pieces of legislation first and then the regulations that will follow, we will need to do our cycle of compulsory community service in relation to the calendar year of the academic institution. In the sense that in order for us to be able to implement effectively in our proposed draft regulations, we have indicated that the latest is by March of each year that the people who will be expected to perform a compulsory community service in January of the following year must have at least received the list of all available places for that following year. That then implies that we have between March and June to sort out the people's choices, the people's preferences, and where we cannot place people into their choices to offer them alternative choices and so on. But we do need that period because then it's followed by us having to secure the issues of accommodation where the places are remote and so on to do those arrangements. So in terms of informing the students, this will have to be at least about, and I prefer the students that we will need another 12 months in order for us to be able to have the people after that, and that is when we have completed the legislative infrastructure and so on. So I do want to say it with confidence, Dr. Modisani, that we will not be in any situation whereby students are only told a month or two before that they are all of a sudden required to go to Pray, to go to Calvinia, to go to Lusiki Siki, and so on. This process, at least the operational aspects, will have to, by latest the March of this year. The reason why we reached this conclusion, Chairperson, is the lessons we learned from the Department of Health. We spent times and times with them looking at what were the positives, what could you have done better, and what are still the weaknesses and so on. And they told us that in order for the administration to plan properly for all the movements and so on, this is the time that is required. But also for the people who will be performing the compulsory community service themselves, some they have got families, some they have got other religious commitments, some of them have got other issues, some of them have got bursary, some of them have got other previous in-service commitments that they have and so on. And in order for one to deal effectively both at a mental level but also in a realistic term with those colleagues, a period of time is actually required. And it, the March being the imaginary deadline at this stage was specifically based on the fact that shortly after that, in the academic calendar, they take their Good Friday holidays. And some of them have actually indicated that once we have the list, we may actually want to go and visit those places and begin to establish contacts and begin to know exactly what we are dealing with and so on before we make the choices and so on. So in terms of these consultations and these plans and these really engaging the students as the key stakeholder, I really want to show colleagues here today that we are doing our best and we have established very good relationships with them and we will continue to do so. Thank you, Chair.
Mrs. Turner.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I would like to know from the doctor, now that he's mentioning the Kumbalvari Community Forum, whether they will be guided by the standard, they will be standardized or will be issue-based, or will this appear on the regulation in different communities?
Maybe just for the department, of course we'll still have to go through this, listening to the extent to which consultation has gone, whether you would have had any consultation as well with the Home Affairs. I mentioned that looking at your object of the legislation itself, among others, it talks about attaining citizenship or permanent residence, so that there is no confusion going forward. Mr. Chamber?
I think we've started asking questions while the department is still answering, because one of my questions is outstanding, but I'm sure they still have it. And then, Chair, just listening to this last explanation, I'm getting a bit concerned, because last time when we discussed this, we said that we can see that the students, the first year that they would start this would be in 2014. But the discussion that I heard you now, and having things ready by March so that the students can, you know, I just want to check this. I'm getting a bit concerned now. Because if there's no regulations in place and the discussions and we haven't really started on that, that's why my first question was this whole question on the discussions with the students. Because the second, third, fourth year students, I think it would be fine. My concern is with the first year. Would we be ready to implement this in 2014? That's basically now my question. Implement in the sense of the first students.
Would start with this in 2014. Yeah. Mine, I think it's similar to this. I'm not a lawmaker per se. I'm not an academic in law. I'm just a politician. I always want to push it. I might go outside the line, but
you are a lawmaker.
I think I'm a policy maker. Yeah, you see, what Mrs. Payne, also I'm getting more worried with what Dr. Montesano said, with the practical implementation of the process. Because if we make a law now that makes it compulsory for people, for them to be accepted to go through compulsory community service, and we still have grey areas in relation to plans and also budgeting. I see a nightmare. You have a legislation that requires this adaptation. The following year, your plans are not yet ready, but the legislation requires that. I think the plan should come first. And then also the law, in terms of its own effect, comes after. Because you cannot have a law without a plan. And then it could put those students into a very serious predicament that is morally bad. Therefore,
I'm very concerned about budgeting the plan, in which we have also raised that we are doing this, which takes me to a question, to the quantity of numbers of these vets that we need in the country, because I'm getting information to the researcher here that the ones that have to be enrolled, the output every year is 120. But how much really do we need? And how do we balance the effect of the legislation and the plan for us not to be in a crisis situation? But I like what the man said, the other doctor on the other side said, that you have in your feasibility arrangement and your consultation, balance what has been happening in the Department of Health and what you want to do. To me, at least give me a bit of surety. But Dr. Moshisane also raises some of this. Secondly, there's a question raised by Jim Wistrom. I hope that also they're going to respond to question number two, which talks about, which also raises an issue of putting a clause within the legislation that compare the institution that provides this to also give us a reflection on demographics and the input that they take of these people and how to manage the situation. If you can also help me on that, I'll be very happy.
Okay.
Thank you.
want to stay, because in that case we might not be having sufficient financial resources. But we do have, at this moment, honorable member, sufficient funds to can be able to implement this, also including to a large extent even some money. At this moment we have 100 million that we can also use for primary animal health care to help those newly qualified veterinarians in terms of providing those services that are needed, particularly, and I want to emphasize particularly in the rural areas. We do have sufficient resources. There has been a lot of planning that went into it. There has been a lot of thought that went into it. The preparations. I think there is a question that was also raised regarding to home affairs. And to the best of my knowledge, that section that refers to, I'm going to request the legal advice from the council to respond to this. But the question of allowing foreigners to qualify to perform continuously perform. There was a challenge there. And then that was the area that I want explained by the developers of the council so that members should understand exactly what the intention is.
The intention of the proposed amendment to Section 25 is to align it with the Immigration Act. The Immigration Act allows the holder of permanent residence to have all the rights, duties, and obligations of a citizen, except where it specifically requires citizenship. In order to allow access to practice in North Africa and to align the Act, the Veterinary and Paramedical Professions Act, with the Immigration Act, this is the only way in which we can allow foreign veterinarians to practice in South Africa. Some of them do not want to give up their national citizenship, but want to practice in South Africa. And the only way we can allow them is to look at the Immigration Act and allow them to practice if they have attained permanent residency in South Africa. Mm.
Dr. Marani, we want to respond to another issue.
Well, I would say, honourable members, there was a question from Honourable Spain with regard to the costs regarding the inspectorate. At the moment, the South African Veterinary Council is self-funding. Our operations are mainly funded by the fees paid by our members. And in anticipation of the establishment of an inspectorate, we, in our three-year budget cycle, we have accommodated the operations of an inspectorate. We have increased our fees based on that. So it is covered. And so maybe I should also respond. It's unfortunate that if I look at the question raised from Honorable Bakla, with regards to the demographics, the letter from Jim, that the university is not here. But I wish that they could be here to respond. But what I know is that, if you recall, following on the concerns which were raised by the forum with the intake, the university re-looked at the the selection criteria. And there's a new policy that has been developed that has various aspects that looks at the constitutional requirements, what the country needs, and so forth. And there are various role players that serve within that selection committee. And we are satisfied as the South African Veterinary Council with what they've come up with that caters for what the country needs. I'm sure they've put it up also in their website, to make sure that everyone has access to the criteria that is used.
Thank you, Chair.
I asked the question whether the compulsory community forum is it a national body or each community will have its own, and how is it regulated? Will it function in a standardized fashion, or it will be issue based according to that community?
Chairperson, thank you. I think Dr. Dupuria still owes us some responses. But I would just like to put this to the Veterinary Council. In one of the presentations where unfortunately the people are not here, there is deep concern about the involvement of veterinarians in the decimating, I'll call it, of our rhino population. And what they are saying here is that should a veterinarian be charged with any rhino poaching crime, I would say not only rhino poaching, I mean any criminal activity, that his or her license to practice should be suspended immediately, and that the Veterinary Council should be informed immediately should the vet be found guilty, that his or her license be revoked permanently. Now, this is the view of an organization calling themselves Outrage South African Citizens Against Poaching, OSCA. The question I'm asking is, do you believe that current legislation has sufficient provision to act in circumstances such as these? If one looks at the number of veterinarians who have been charged, I don't know how many have been found guilty yet, because you know being charged and being found guilty are two different issues. But there does seem in the public mind a feeling that people who have access to certain types of drugs are able to use that access in helping to enrich themselves at the expense of the decimation of a particular species. So I would like to have your response about that. And Chairperson, yes, I agree with you that the Portfolio Committee's responsibility and ultimately Parliament's responsibility is to see that we make legislation. But I'm guided by the fact that we have over the years developed a system where we take account of how the sectors of society that are going to be impacted upon by any legislation feel about such prospective legislation. You take that into account and finally then decide, having taken all factors into account, what would be best for the country and for all the sectors that are involved. Thank you, Chair.
We seem to have also gotten to the other two submissions, which I don't think there's a crime at all in that. So we certainly do have the copies in front of ourselves. I'm sure you also do have copies. So we would make reference to those as well as a response.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. To answer Honourable Member Abram, you did ask specific questions there and we sort of digressed into some of the logistics. A lot of what he asked has been answered by Doug, but pertaining to have we gone through this and did we look at every dotted I across T? Yes, we did. Since the initial drafts, we've circulated it through the groups and the branches and the membership of SAVA not less than 6 times. So yes, we have looked at the content of what is in the Act. However, I absolutely agree with him on the fact that what we are offering is totally voluntary. We are a voluntary association, and our members are offering their services and the possibility of being involved in public-private partnerships. And yes, that has to be solidified in memorandums of understanding between the official bodies, and then contracts between the on-the-ground service deliverers who will act as mentors or officials and put their facilities. So I absolutely agree with him, because in a year's time I will not be president anymore, and the next guy will only be 2 years. And that's how it is in a voluntary association, and people will change at DAF also. So these things have to be written down black and white and solidified in a memorandum of understanding, which I hope we will move towards very fast. Yes, I hope that answers what you wanted to know. Maybe I can just allude to why are private veterinarians so much interested in this. It is because if you look especially at the rural areas and rural practicing veterinarians in outlying areas, there are 200 of those practices. Of the nearly 1,000 veterinary practices in South Africa, about 200 are what we call rural. So they would be, for example, Bray was mentioned here as a station, a state vet station, where a young vet doesn't want to go. But only 80 kilometers from Bray, there is a practicing veterinarian in Stella. So that would be a perfect example of how this can be implemented, that there is a very efficient, a very senior private veterinarian in Stella that could act as a mentor to the person and a support system to the person who will be stationed in Bray. However, if you look at the average age of those 200 practices, some of them have more than one vet. There are 360 vets practicing in those 200 practices. If you look at the average age of those 360 veterinarians, it's above 50. It's between 50 and 56. So we're going to lose that whole infrastructure within the next 15 years. For us, that is of great concern. The excitement is in if I act as a mentor and a coach and an official appointed by DAF for a young veterinarian over the next year, hopefully I can mentor him that he stays with me. If he can't be taken up in the state services, over a year's period the relationship has been built up, and maybe he can become an assistant and a new partner for me, because I'll be going out of practice within the next 10 years. And what a fantastic opportunity. Exactly. So, those veterinarians will have the opportunity of coaching young veterinarians into private practice. That's the one thing. The other thing is I can see this network of working together only supporting the national herd and national disease monitoring and really making it very, very, very strong. So for us it is very important to have this sorted out in a very well laid out memorandum of understanding.
Sorry, Chair, can I just ask Dr. De Vries whether he wants to comment on this request regarding those veterinarians that have been involved in sort of assisting the decimation of our rhino population?
Yes, also a very high concern for us, and that's the reason in point two why, that's exactly the reason why I said the formation of the inspectorate is of such urgent importance for us. I don't know if it was you or who asked, but five veterinarians up to now have been implicated. As you said, implicated and being arrested doesn't mean that they are guilty, so we are waiting for that. But we are very concerned about this, and therefore having an inspector that, as the legal representative, Mr. Becker, said, that can get to the facts very much faster than the current and really go in and look at records and see see what transactions has gone on. It will speed up the process, and it will give the prosecutors so much more to evidence to work with. I don't know if that is what you're.
Sorry, Chair. My interest is here's a request that if such a person has been found guilty, that person's license to practice should be suspended immediately. Is the current legislation providing for it? If not, do we need to look at this very seriously? That's what I'm asking.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I think it's just referring to the concerns of Oscar. Maybe I must respond in two broad ways. The first one, in terms of whether the current act is sufficient to deal with such cases. And my response will be yes or no. Yes, in the terms that with the current system is that the matters have been investigated, and in collaboration with the stakeholders, for example, we spoke about the search and NPA, that we have to make sure that we don't interfere with their processes and make sure that we wait for the final process to take place before we can act. Now, no, in terms of, if you look at the proposals in terms of the bill, there are two sections, Section 28 and Section 31. Where is my request in terms of Section 28, what is being said here about immediate suspension? And that's a classical example of if that is approved, how we could intervene as the South African Development Council. But again, coming back to the broad issue of the poaching of the lands, as Dr. Rian Dupuy said, when looking at the figures, it's to us less than 0.03% of that alleged to be involved. Now, what have we done as the South African Veterinary Council in collaboration with stakeholders to deal with the issue? The first issue we dealt with was how do we ensure that the vets comply in terms of the Medicines Control Act? And we have had engagement with the Registrar of Medicines and the MERA MRA, the Medicines Regulatory Authority, in making sure that we can deal with allegations of vets not controlling medicines in terms of the Medicines Control Act. Now, we also came up with a rule within the council. It's called Rule 10. And that rule actually deals with the use of opioids. And that N99, for example, that is the product used to anesthetize game animals. And that is the main problem that is it was alleged that the vets are using to be involved in line poaching. Now, what used to happen in the past because of the shortage of vets is that you'd find that, and actually what the law says in terms of the Medicines Control Act is that you may prescribe the product in terms in line with your field of practice. Now, what we have done as a South African Veterinary Council, we have came up with a rule where we say that a veterinarian must be the end user of the product, whereby we are stopping vets from prescribing the product to game farmers and so forth that can be used illegally. And we are actually convinced that in most of the poaching situations, the use of the product up to so far is very limited. And we have also engaged the manufacturers of the products about how they could implement traceability system of these products. Now, we participated in the portfolio committee of environment yes, to make sure that we advise on how the whole issue of rhino poaching can be dealt with in the country. Now, we also, as a profession, developed an emergency approach to assist veterinarians and game farmers on how they could deal with
rhinos that are unfortunately experienced or in birth where they have been poached. Okay. Now, what we have also done, we have reviewed our penalties within South African Veterinary Council. Because the penalty that we had, for example, the maximum financial penalty was 25,000. And we said, that's not enough. And we have reviewed that. So that's how far I could respond with regards to this issue. Thank you.
Mm. And that becomes always an issue, that to move this back here, you might have the signature from Bian and from Han, and it's still here. So those are possibilities that we must anticipate. Second picture, if, with your indulgence, Dr. Mulisani mentioned previously at the last meeting that we are going to have the Republican veterinary services being assessed. And one of the indications of a good veterinary system is the partnership with your private community. And it is where we need to pick up hands and ensure that we work together in partnership to ensure that there is a seamless in working togetherness between the state. And that will also assist in ensuring that our new vets who are doing compulsory community service are in good hands in terms of the military needs. Thank you.
I think we covered members for the third last time. Oh, yes. Sorry. I thought you had responded, or you were responding to Dr. Mulisani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies again, Honorable Member. I think the reason why we seem to be avoiding this question was because it was extremely difficult to eventually coin the final framework or the final proposal on how the compulsory community service forums should be. When we started our consultative process, I think we had in mind a system where we have a national system that is standardized everywhere. I think we were more concerned about whatever activity that relates to compulsory community service that happens in that corner of the country, and the experience that young vet experiences is exactly the same as the one that in another end we do. But through our consultation process and through listening to our stakeholders on the inputs and submission, we actually learned differently that it will be necessary to have some form of a let me call it a national compulsory community service fora at a national level that will just be looking in terms of its terms of reference, the overarching issues and so on. But we were advised by our stakeholders during the consultations that just because the landscape of a setup differs from one province to another province to another province, and equally in terms of the issues pertaining to animals and the priority problems and the issues requiring attention is also different. And in that case, as much as you will have a national compulsory service forum, it will be necessary to have the other, let me call it the sub forums that respond to province to province issue and so forth. And in fact, at that time, some of the examples that we picked up on our notes was that somebody actually said that, for example, the arrangements in providing veterinary services in Western Cape and the outskirts of Cape Town and so on, and the nature of institutions that exist there, it's totally different from what you have in the Eastern Cape and the arrangements and so on. And for that, you cannot have a national, strictly standardized thing that it must exactly be like this. You need something that is tailored, that responds to those things. And in fact, in examples that we give in the Eastern Cape, the delegation there even indicated that even within the province, it may be necessary to look at various regions and so on. And someone made an example of that. If you are dealing with the Transkei area, in which it's an area of, I think we're only making it a distance of 200 kilometers from where there is only one private vet, all the way where you only have the rural areas and so on. They say that situation is totally different from the PE region
in which you are dealing with a totally different system and so on. And based on that, we have coined in our proposal then that there will be a national compulsory community service framework that looks at the principles and overarching issues and all those. But there will be a provincial and in some places a regional kind of forums that respond to the nature of the living and the social issues in those areas. Thank you very much.
At the risk of rushing to close, I will still open up by way of asking if are we all done once again.
Yes, Chairperson, I just want to comment on Dr. Monsani's comment that he made on a positive unintended consequence. I think also that is something that must be taken into account from the beginning, that people mustn't expect this as to be a full-time position. You know, I think, you know, that it is something that could come up, but there must be a strict thing in there to say that 1 year and then thereafter people are free to apply for any position wherever. But also just to say that I live in a small place, even smaller than Brit. We don't have a vet anywhere near, so I know exactly, and one of the biggest challenges, Chair, that you're going to sit with, why people don't want to move to those areas. If they are married and they have children, there is no school facilities in most of the cases. So I think that is the biggest challenge that you will deal with, because when we in our area get doctors and teachers and policemen, that's the single most biggest challenge that we deal with, is a place for the children to go to school.
Okay, members, let me also confess, for those of us who have just joined our committee, that this is a very first legislation that we're dealing with in the committee. This legislation has since been coming from 2012. And I'm sure the department going forward is now well aware of what to expect from members in dealing with any piece of legislation. It gets to be robust, as we have seen with preliminary encounters we've just had, and then we look forward to receiving more legislations. The system in Parliament, you know, the basic is that it works in the manner it is working. Granted, we do possess a role in application from committee's point of view to generate legislation. Having attempted at one point sometime, I think last year, we were confronted with some, you know, capacity issues. And I remember having made contact with Advocate Jenkins, where it became practically impossible to move forward. I can't remember the piece of legislation that we were trying to generate from a committee point of view. I think we are also dealing with a piece of legislation that is smooth sailing, as it were. So we do not expect much, if any, fireworks. However, we look forward to it being tabled on the 21st, which is next week, trusting that we're not going to have much time, just because we shall familiarize ourselves with the legislation. What I would also urge members to do is we read these amendments. We also read this amendment in collaboration with the Principal Act itself. I think it would really take us forward much faster, and also gives us a bit background in terms of, you know, understanding what currently is proposed. Some of the issues that have
also in absentia those also that had submitted from Oscar and also Ms. Wittstrom, Jim Wittstrom. My members, without taking much of the time, we have tea outside, but I thought we might just wish to cover everything so that we break once and for the day. And we're informed, I don't know why or how, but there is lunch. It happens also once. They respect legislation, I guess. So just a quick one, two quick ones, members. We have and we must eat lunch so that we don't get fruitless expenditure. The study tour, it has since been postponed from beginning of September to late September. I've asked now also yesterday to give us some specific dates. It is said that during that first week, some important activity within Parliament wherein everybody shall be expected to be present. That's the sole reason. Also, that time will then have to be spent on committee work or on study or policy oversight visits, but within the country, so to speak. So we'll have to get a specific date, and then those shall be communicated to meet next week. And there's a draft program which I also thought might wish to interact with as well. And what I'll ask to know is to circulate that for members as we comments. The 21st is going to be time that we engage with the legislation itself. And the 28th, we're having the minister before us. Specifically, the item shall be official. We all know that we shall be expected to present the report of transmission of fisheries, the hearings that we took last year in June, this afternoon. There are a few invitations that now circulate to all of us. I was asking her if we do have any. I remember top of my head that Wool Growers, I think they have a conference somewhere north of Mtata or something. I got that invitation from Harry Prinsloo. But I'll refer all of those through to now to communicate all of those through to the members. We did receive approaches from Minister, from Deputy Minister, and also from Omanyalungu. I don't know of any other approaches. Any. It is said that none. She is off sick. Members, we are done now. Thank you. Enjoy tea and lunch.
Well, I'm not making any difference. They've been removed by the house. So, I'll share the